Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Time to talk fishing with our guest, Skip Sommerfeld, retired Wisconsin DNR fish biologist. He's also a very experienced fisherman, and always fun to have him come by and talk about fish and fishing. And I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about fishing? Maybe you're new to the sport or want to get involved, or maybe you've been doing it a long time. Do you need ideas for good areas to fish? Have you got a good fishing experience to share? Lots of things we can talk about. I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Skip Sommerfeld, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Can you hear me? Yeah, we can hear you. You're coming in loud and clear. You participated in an eight-hour bass tournament on Saturday. How'd you do?
We did really well. We caught fish right away in the morning, starting at 8 o'clock. Our tournament started at 8. And by 9 o'clock, we had our five-fish limit. And then, since we're a tournament, we're allowed to cull. So we sat all day sorting fish. And it was a fun day. And I always tell my partner, I said, when my thumbs are sore and they start bleeding, we're having a good day.
Any records broken in that one?
No, the big fish were hard to come by, but a lot of 2.5, 3-pound bass, 16, 17 inches. My partner and I, we ended up third place. So just enough to get our entry money back. It was just a fun day to be on the water.
How popular are these tournaments?
Oh, I think they're becoming more and more popular. And I think they're becoming more and more accepted by the general public because they realize that we really take catch and release serious. We put a pretty severe penalty for any dead fish brought into the weigh scales. So all participants really, make an effort at keeping all of their fish alive. We had 10 boats on Saturday. And out of the 10 boats, 9 of them brought in 5-fish limits, and there was not a dead fish in the bunch. So every one of them went back to the lake alive. And as I think everybody knows, fish can be recycled, caught over and over again.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing to see on the tournaments. And, it's becoming more and more accepted by the public. We still get some issues with tying up boat landings, and fishing people's docks. They think they own the area around the docks. And, the docks are really a really good hiding spot for bass. And a lot of people just don't realize that. So,
yeah, when I lived on Lake Monona, we had a big bass that hung out right by my boat hoist. And it was
a good spot. I like to see them.
It was a great spot. It's kind of fun to watch her in action too. You're on Butternut Lake, which is a fun lake to fish. What have you been catching there?
For me, this spring has been one of the slowest I've seen in the last 8 or 10 years. I don't even bother putting my boat in out here because I can just go right out on my dock and just sit for the first month of the season and catch walleyes right off my dock. And like last year, I had like 24, 25 trips in a row where I caught a limit of walleyes off my dock every night. I don't keep every limit, but if I get to three fish, I consider that my limit. And, I keep a few meals for the freezer and for feeding the family. But this year has been tough. I fished two nights ago. I think I sat out on the dock for an hour and a half and caught one walleye. And so it's been tough. We have walleye league out there tonight. So this is going to be interesting to see how the walleye league anglers end up catching fish. The walleye are seem to be in transition from, you know, post-spawning into their regular summer patterns. So they can be anywhere. They can be in 2 feet of water or out in 16 feet around the structure, rock bars, that sort of thing.
So the cold weather we had in spring, that had an effect on fishing?
Yes, it did. It set pretty much all the plant and water temperature schedules back. You know, it delayed spawning for a lot of fish. And then once the water did warm up, we warmed up quickly. We had cold spells, warmed up again, cold spells. So it put especially like the muskie and now the bass on and off of spawning. You know, I think the walleye came in quick and spawned as soon as the ice went out. You know, in early May, we didn't have ice out on butternut here till May 4th. And I think the walleye were already spawning before the ice was fully off the lake because there were open areas around spawning areas. But even the weed growth is way behind, you know, except in the shallowest of the shallow bays. But just weed beds haven't quite developed the way they normally do, you know, for almost, you know, the first part of June. And it's made things interesting for fishing, let's put it that way. We've struggled to find the walleyes. So we're going to hit them hard tonight and see what happens.
Skip Sommerfeld, our guest today, retired Wisconsin DNR Resources fish biologist, as we talk with him about fishing, giving you a fishing update. A little problem with our phones at the moment. You can email in at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org with your questions. I know there's people trying to get in on the phones, and we're just having a little issue I think should be resolved in the next 5 minutes five or 6 minutes. So in the meantime, if you've got something you want to email us about, we can certainly talk with you via email. You mentioned Walleye League, I think. You're involved in a couple of fishing leagues this year. How does that work?
Well, we have actually right down in the Park Falls area, we have four different leagues going. There is, I believe, a muskie league going out of Phillips, Wisconsin on Monday. And there's also a new walleye league. It's called a traveling walleye league where they move to a different lake each week, and they do 3 hours of fishing, I believe, 6 to 9. Tuesday nights, our local bass club has run of a Tuesday night bass league for going on 25 plus years, and that's pretty popular. We start, and that's a traveling league already as well. We move to a different lake each week, and we start at 6 o'clock. For the first few weeks here with different bass regulations, smallmouth being closed on a lot of waters up here, we have what's called paper tournaments. So you write down what you catch, get a picture of the fish you caught, bring it in, we tally them up, and the winner wins for the night. You know, it's a small amount. Everybody throws in $10. And, you know, the winner takes a portion, second place gets a portion. And, you know, it's a fun league. Everybody shares their secrets, not necessarily their spots, but what they caught the fish on. And, you know, it's just a good way to learn is come and just listen to the guys afterwards. We usually sit around and talk and see what was successful, what wasn't. And we do have a walleye league. It's specifically on Butternut Lake on Wednesday nights. Again, that goes 6 to 9. We go out, we stress catch and release as well on all our leagues. We stress catch and release. And with walleye, sometimes we're allowed to use live bait. You are going to have deep hooked fish that die, so we don't penalize anglers for dead fish on that. But again, you know, we get anywhere 10 to 20 anglers participating each night. And we like to gather afterwards, you know, and share what you caught them on. Share, you know, everybody wants to know, you know, if you had a good night, where were they and what'd you catch them on? So it's just a good way. And I summarize the results. I send them to the local paper. They publish them. And it's kind of unbelievable how many people actually follow the league results each week in the paper. So it's
pretty cool. What'd you catch them on? That's I use that sort of, I tied that whole, all those words together into one word when I wrote a story once for the State Journal on the muskie tournament that I was in, that went way back, a long time back, and the Hayward Muskie Tournament, and I caught the second place fish, and it was quite a nice story about catching that fish. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to get out there and fish. Now, muskie fishing can be a bit of work. I don't know that I'd recommend it for somebody who's just starting out and, you know, without a boat or whatever. Although a kid here in Madison was kind of trolling as he walked up and down a pier and happened to catch a 45-inch muskie while he was walking up and down the pier dragging the lure in the water.
Those are stories you're going to remember for a lifetime.
Oh, man, there's the great stories. Again, you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. I think we're going to have our phone situation resolved pretty quickly. Let's talk about first-time anglers. What advice do you have for first-time anglers?
First-time anglers, probably most of them are not going to have a boat or access to a boat. So I would say, you know, find a shore fishing spot. And I think the DNR actually has a website with shore fishing spots listed. And when you go out, you know, it's the old KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
And, you know, just either, you know, bring night crawlers or a bucket of minnows and try about as simple a rig as you can. Even, you know, for a beginner, a slip bobber rig is really handy, but for a beginner, you know, it's hard to understand it till you start fishing a little bit and understand what a slip bobber rig works. But, you know, if you hang, you never throw a whole night crawler on a simple rig. You know, if you're going to fish a bobber rig, you know, I see a lot of people almost using too small a hook sometimes and too large a hooks, you know, a number six or even a number four hook, you know, with a split shot about 6 inches
above
the hook and, you know, underneath a bobber, 3 or 4 feet will work, you know, and if you know how to set up a slip bobber rig, and you got a little deeper water, I usually set it at about 9 or 10 feet, you know, and you throw it out as far as you can. You know, the bobber rig is the simplest to use. You know, when the bobber goes down, a fish is biting.
Yep, absolutely. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you know, if a bobber goes down, you got to bite.
There you go. We can talk some more about getting started in fishing and a whole lot of other things as well with our guest, Skip Sommerfeld, retired Wisconsin DNR Resources 5th biologist. Jill Nadeau is our producer, by the way. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking fishing with Skip Sommerfeld, retired Wisconsin DNR fish biologist. I think our phones are ready to go, so let's give we'll let you call in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Randy emailed, he just purchased a pontoon float, and he's never used one before. Any hints or tips for fishing with a pontoon?
Yes, I do. I actually enjoy fishing out of pontoon boats. You're not sitting, you know, in a little 16-foot type boat and getting boat bugged all day. You can get up, walk around on a pontoon. But the way I recommend it is you find some sort of structure. You know, a lot of lake associations have put in fish cribs, or the DNR has put in fish cribs. Or you can find a rock bar, and what you do is, you know, locate the bar, maybe put a marker on it, a marker buoy, back off a little bit if you can anchor on it, and then you fish around the structure. Sitting on the pontoon, you can, you know, get up, walk around, stretch your legs, especially the older you get. Harder to sit in a boat for hours on end, but a pontoon is really comfortable to fish out of, and it can be very productive. A year or two ago, I had the opportunity to take people out on pontoon tours and fishing expeditions on Butternut Lake here, and that's exactly what we did. I knew where most of the fish cribs were. We'd mark one, throw a marker buoy on it, back off a little bit, and throw our slip bobbers or just a simple crawler or minnow rigs near it. And, you know, we'd catch fish.
Yeah.
Cam, pretty much anything.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. It's to fish out of one, although I think I prefer for, like, musky fishing with casting. I'd rather be in a 16-footer or something like that. That has sort of a platform set up for that kind of thing. Cam emailed to ask if it's possible to keep certain fish for an aquarium, or would you have to find an alternative for that specific fish? Obviously, it would have to be like 150-plus gallon aquarium.
Yeah, there are specific rules on that. I know a lot of schools like to have you know, aquariums, and you can get, you know, if you call the local warden, I think they can get you some kind of game fish exemption type permit to allow you to have like an undersized bass, you know, in your aquarium. But again, there might be minimum sizes of aquarium and that sort of thing. But, you know, they're very interesting to watch. Our local DNR office, we used to have like a 100-gallon aquarium, and we would put, you know, small muskies in there, small bass. If guys would, the survey crews would find gar on occasion. Those are really interesting to watch in an aquarium on, you know, and see how they eat. It's interesting to watch, but I believe you do need some kind of exemption. You know, it's best just to call the warden and find out how they view that and enforce that.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was a difference between a sport fish like a bass or muskie versus, say, a bluegill or other, you know, maybe a crappie where
I believe panfish with no size limits on most lakes are allowed, but most game fish have a minimum size. And if you, you know, get the, I forget what the exact permit or allowance is called, but they'll allow you to have an undersized game fish, you know, in the aquarium. But panfish are okay to have in the aquarium, and, you know, such things as crappie, bluegill, pumpkin seed, you know, are sometimes great to watch. What I found is having an aquarium was pumpkin seed. If you got a problem with snails, the pumpkin seed will take care of your snail problem.
There you go. They do a little cleaning.
They do a little cleaning. For some reason, they must have a mouth, gill rake or structure that they're able to eat small snails, crunch them up, and digest them.
Sophie emailed that Delavan Lake has night bow fishing for carp, and they use large halogen lights lighting up the whole lake. She's never done it, but was wondering what the regulations are for this. Is it just for keeping invasives to a minimum?
That is part of it, with allowing, you know, carp and suckers and some other species, I think like bullfin, are considered trash fish, meaning the season is open year-round and you can take them by any means. And bull fishing for carp is becoming very popular, believe it or not. And a lot of people get, you know, large rigs with lighted up with halogen lights, and they go out and bow fish. You know, it keeps their bow hunting skills sharp. And, you know, carp can be an issue if they become overabundant in a lake, and especially down southern Wisconsin, there's a lot of lakes with high densities of carp, and they want to control them. So they, you know, they allow bow fishing pretty much. I don't even think there's a limit on carp. You know, the carp are so abundant in some waters, they even issue commercial fishing permits for people to go out and the commercial fishermen to use their gear and harvest carp to help reduce population. So in essence, the you know, the night bow fishing for carp is beneficial.
Eric in Madison is online with a comment or question. Eric, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, gentlemen. I was just questioning if you could help me catch some fish up on Spring Lake in Partyville. I'm kind of looking for bass. It's about 37 acres. Its water clarity is usually not very clear, and I want to catch some bass. It's about 32 foot deep at the biggest and 37 acres. You got any tips for me, please? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay. So we got a small lake there, Skip.
Yep.
And I imagine structure would be a role there.
Well, the thing is, structure, no structure, if there's bass, they're either going to be, you know, up in the weeds, you know, near the lily pads, in any kind of woody structure. My recommendation would be what I have found works best for me in the last bunch of years has been the Cinco rig. Is you use either you can wacky rig it. I go more simple and just use like a 2-aught bass hook and Texas rig a Cinco, and you go out in a boat, you stay off the weed line, and you cast up near any kind of woody structure, you know, in the middle of lily pads, weed edges, under docks, tree drops, that sort of thing. And the Cinco is one of the easiest to fish. My three girls that I taught how to fish, they've become masters of that type of fishing. Is you rig it up, you throw it near the cover, you clip your bail over and just let the bait sink in the water. It's an unweighted type lure and rig, and you watch your line for it to twitch. And you pull back a little bit. If you feel resistance, you set the hook. But you're going to fish. Like right now, it seems that the bass, a lot of them, especially southern Wisconsin, are going to be post-spawn. They seem to be cruising in the lily pad beds or the new weed beds coming up. And that's a good place just to throw the unweighted Cinco-type lure and, you know, watch for the line to dart. When you see a dart, pull back and catch the fish. A lot of people are starting to use topwaters, especially rubber frogs. And, again, throwing it around lily pads and the developing weed beds and just hopping the frog over to the top. And the thing, if you're going to throw a rubber frog, as soon as you see the splash, you don't set the hook because you'll lose it. You got to wait for them to inhale it because a lot of times the bass will jump behind it and come down on top of the frog. And if you see the splash and pull the frog, he misses it. So you wait till you feel the line tighten up and then you set the hook. So I guess those are my tips for, trying to catch bass early season here with a simple rig on a small lake.
And somebody's already asking, what the heck's a Cinco?
A Cinco is it's a generic term. Every different lure company has different names for them. And like Yum makes them. They're called Yum Dingers. Yama Cincos were the original ones. They are very expensive. And at least, well, I shouldn't be any downgrading any products. But, you know, you'll find your favorite. What it is about, they come in 4 to 6 inch sizes. It's a heavy plastic, heavily scented, and heavily salted. And you Texas rig it, or a lot of people call wacky rigging, where you use a circle hook. I found that to be kind of difficult to use, so I just do the old Texas rig with a larger bass hook and hook it weedless, and you throw it out near cover. And like I said, it's a heavily scented, heavy plastic, heavily salted, and it does a slow sink. And for some reason, the bass can't resist it. And they'll grab it, and you'll see your line twitch. And if it moves, you pull back and set the hook.
There you go. Let's take another caller here, Frank and Toma. Hi, Frank.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thanks. I love the show. I wanted to ask your expert there. I do a lot of smallmouth fishing on the Wisconsin River, and I feel like I do pretty well, a lot of 18, 19-inch smallmouth. But I see, like, on the Great Lakes, these smallmouth are feeding on gobies. I'm not sure exactly what that is, some type of minnow bait. Are those invasive? Could something like that be transplanted to the Wisconsin to make our smallmouth just double in size? Or is that never going to happen? Thank you.
Well, pretty much gobies aren't invasive, and transplanting them to the Wisconsin River will not happen. It's just, you know, it is an exotic. It can crowd out native species. And, you know, I well know that gobies, for some reason, there's an innate instinct in smallmouth that if they see a goby, they will eat it. And I know on the Great Lakes, I'm familiar with the Bay of Green Bay and around Sturgeon Bay. Boy, if you got a bait that looks like a goby, the smallies will smash it. But like I said, it's an invasive. It can crowd out some native species, and you will not see it transplanted inland. And that's part of the reason why some people, you know, move these invasives around, because they think they're going to be better for the fishery, but is not recommended, because you can really wreak havoc on a native fishery and the native forage base if these exotic species come in.
So better to get some baits that look like gobies and use those plastic baits or rubber baits as opposed to the actual goby itself. Makes good sense.
That's a good point to make. I was going to make that myself, but it slipped by me. But yeah, if you can find a bait that imitates a goby that's working on the Great Lakes, for some reason it seems like an innate instinct for smallmouth just to eat gobies.
Nancy, thanks again, Frank. Nancy in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. Thank you for your show. I was just wondering if the speaker could please address the issue of using lead-based sinkers and hooks or whatever, lead-based, and its effect on things like loons and ducks. And I know it has some terrible neurological issues when these birds consume, you know, fish that have been caught with that. So I can take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Nancy. What do you think, Skip?
Yes, that's been a big push for the last, 6, 7, 8 years, is to get away from lead. And a lot of anglers and, you know, even some bait companies are getting away from using, you know, lead-based split shot sinkers, that sort of thing, and going to, I believe, titanium is the metal of choice. Titanium is not quite as dense and heavy as lead, so a lot of anglers do not like it. But, you know, that the same issue goes along with, you know, duck hunters and, you know, any kind of
deer hunters too, for that matter.
Water, yeah. Now they're talking deer hunters with using, you know, lead bullets. But it seemed to me it was a bigger issue with the waterfowl hunters using lead shot over water, and that's why they went to steel shot. If you're going to hunt any kind of waterfowl, is because all the lead that would be dropped in the water, and I think that was a much greater proportion of lead in our waterways than like lead sinkers, lead split shot, and lead jigs. You know, people do, you know, lose baits on occasion, but, you know, duck hunters and waterfowl hunters do seem, you know, when lead shot was available and used, that would be a lot of little lead pellets put on the bottom.
Yeah.
So, but there is an effort, you know, by the industry to push titanium, and a lot of anglers are going that way, is using the titanium and alternate lead weights, split shot, that sort of thing.
Ben in Wausau emailed a story. He was fishing the Spirit Flowage Dam in Tomahawk for walleye. About 9:30 at night, he looked up in the sky and saw the Starlink satellites all in a row, 30 or 40 of them, equally distanced as far as he could see, and he thought it was military coming, and he packed up and drove back home, only to find out it was satellites.
Well, that's interesting. When you're in northern Wisconsin, I keep looking for the northern lights. And I have a hard time seeing the northern lights. I wouldn't mind seeing a line of satellites sometime, and, you know, imagine it's the military or UFOs invading.
I drove, my daughter and I, daughter Emily and I drove to Bayfield last week, and we did the broadcast, the Bayfield and Bloom event up there. But as we were driving up, of course, we went through the town. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking suddenly, but it's the town where St. Croix rods are made. And it reminded me that that's a the St. Croix makes some really good rods, and here we are.
That's my hometown. That's St. Croix Rods is in Park Falls.
Park Falls, of course. I don't know why I couldn't think of Park Falls.
And but, that's where I'm located.
And he and the they're always coming out with new new things and new ways of producing rods.
Yes, they are. They they're very innovative. They brought in, you know, design engineers and field testers. And every time I walk in to buy minnows, they want me to sign up to work in the bait shop there and sell minnows and fishing rods for them. But being retired, I'd rather spend my time out fishing and, than sitting in selling minnows and fishing rods. No, it's a really nice place. They give tours. They got a heck of a, you know, nice shop there. All kinds of gear, about every kind of fishing rod you can imagine for different species, different actions, that sort of thing. And the workers there are, you know, extremely helpful. I know most of them. And, you know, it's all you got to ask, you know, ask a clerk, you know, I want to fish this species. What would be the best rod and reel combination? And they'll set you up.
Yeah, they will indeed. Well, that's a good note to end our talk with today, Skip. I want to thank you once more. It's always fun to talk with you about fishing, and hopefully we'll be able to do this again down the road. Thank you.
Well, hopefully. It's always fun to talk fishing.
Skip Sommerfeld, retired Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources fish biologist. It was fun talking with him, and I'm sure we'll get him back at some point, and we'll talk some more about fishing. We're going to stay in the water coming up. There are 30 estuary research reserves across the U.S., one of them right here on Lake Superior. We're going to be talking about that with a couple of guests coming up. I'm Larry Mealer. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.